four-legged, tottering hulks with cannons instead of tusks. The bright orange of your pilot's jumpsuit makes an inviting target against the snow, you realize. You wonder who decided on orange. Usually military uniforms are camouflage. Orange is only camouflage once you're going up in flames. The cannons on the closest walker blaze to life, sending bright red bursts of laser fire directly at the rebel's trench. The ground shudders at the impact. Okay! You bellow to the troops manning the guns on the ground. See if you can hold them! Pilots, mount up! You open the hatch of your snowspeeder, a small ship, outfitted with two seats inside, back to back, for a pilot and a gunner, two laser cannons, and a harpoon gun with a tow cable. That, in particular, makes you feel safe. Nothing strikes more fear in the commander of an enormous steel war machine than a harpoon gun. Someone should have told the designer of the snowspeeders that these elephoths are made of steel. Your gunner, young and fresh-faced, climbs in behind you. "Hey, Luke," he says. "Feeling better?" "Like new, Dak. You?" Young Dak turns around to shoot you a brave smile. "I feel like I could take on the whole empire by myself." "I know what you mean." You grin, still looking at Dak. You notice his downy cheeks are pale and drawn. And for good reason. Every rebel on Hoth won't be enough to rebuff this small contingent of Imperial troops. Not nearly enough. Dak knows it, and so do you. Nevertheless, within minutes, you and the other speeders are flying across the quilted ice, locked in on the hulking behemoths of war. "All right, boys, stay together now," you call. Dak's high voice is shaky.
"Luke, I can't get a read on them."
So you say, "Steady, Dak." You lead the speeders into an attack formation. Two blasts explode just off the speeder's starboard side. You bank hard right, circumnavigating the explosion and flying out wide to the beast's flank, where its great tusk-like guns can't hit you. Then you kick up the accelerator and aim at its legs. You with me, Dak?
"I'm okay, sir."
He doesn't sound okay. From the trenches in front of the base, rebel fire keeps the platoons of stormtroopers at bay, preventing them from rushing the power generators. This is the point of the whole attack. No power generators, no shields. No shields, and those star destroyers up in the sky scorch the rebel base into oblivion. But the rebel fire is doing nothing to slow the snowwalkers, which are lumbering inexorably onward, laser blasts bouncing uselessly off their armor. Your craft approaches the lead snowwalker. Another speeder skims the snow just behind you. Then it explodes.
"They got Rogue Seven!"
Dak yells. You grit your teeth. "Stay with me, Dak. We're coming in." The speeder darts between the snowwalker's tall, double-jointed legs. "Now!" Dak might be nervous, but those young hands are steady. His blast explodes directly on the underside of the walker's head. Your stomach turns over. The walker is moving forward, entirely unaffected. "Forget the blasters!" you shout into the intercom. Other pilots are cursing. You pause, and then you think of elephants. "Use your harpoon and tow cables! Go for their legs!" A pilot's voice crackles through the transmitter.
"Will that work?"
Lasers are exploding all around him. "No idea, but the blasters won't."
"Luke!"
Dak's voice is laced with panic now.
"Luke, we've got a malfunction in the fire control."
"Hold on, Dak. Focus on the tow cable."
"Luke!"
"Stay focused." You're steering toward another snowwalker, through a crushing volley of lasers and shrapnel. You're getting closer. The snow rushes beneath the ship. The great beast is growing before you. The sounds of explosions, crunching snow, and buckling metal are nearly deafening. "Ready, Dak?" There is no response. "Dak!" You turn around. Dak's head is slumped over to one side, and his body lies limp against a blinking control panel. Blood is clotting in his hair. You swivel back to your steering columns. You feel sick. You take a deep breath. Your eyes are open, but you do not see. You are breathing in and out, in and out. Dak is dead. Yes, and you cannot change that. Lesson iota. Peace in a time of crisis. What? Meditate? Luke's gunner and friend is dead, and he's supposed to meditate? Yup. I mean, he could give in to rage or despair, go out in a blaze of glory, or turn tail, run, seethe, weep. Those would all be normal things to do. But those are, at best, the paths to defeat. At worst, they are paths to the dark side. Think of something that has upset you, my young friend. Something that makes your blood race through your veins, or brings up an uncomfortable bulge in your throat when you think of it. When someone teased you, or lied to you, or hurt you. Please, think back to such a time. Now stand on one foot, or balance the book on your head, and breathe. Have someone count to 30, or time yourself. See if you can focus only on your breath. Nothing else. Did it? It isn't easy, is it? Go ahead. Keep trying. You're making progress. I can tell. Chapter 10. The Snowwalkers are nearing the Rebel Trench. Behind the trench, a dish gazes up into the sky. In great cubes of steel and lithium, power surges, flowing to the halls of the Rebel base, to the ion cannons, to the shields. Your breath is flowing in and out of your body. Your eyes are clear. You are calm. You speak. Rogue Leader to Rogue 3. I've lost Dak. You'll have to take this shot. Follow me on the next pass.
Coming around, Rogue Leader.
The speeders bank, and you steer for the legs of the lead Snowwalker. Your hands grip the steering column, knuckles blanching with the pressure, breath concentrated into a single line that goes in your nose, down to the bottom of your belly, and then gently flows out the way it came. Laser blasts erupt all around you. You ignore them. They will not hit you. You can tell. You reach the Snowwalker, and as you duck through its great legs, followed hard by Rogue 3, you shout, "Go!" From the back of Rogue 3, a harpoon shoots out and buries itself in the Snowwalker's knee joint. He turns hard, creating a tight circle around the Snowwalker. Rogue 3 follows. You peel off, but Rogue 3 continues its run, looping the steel tow cables around and around and around the Snowwalker's legs. At last, Rogue 3 follows you away from the steel beast. "Release!" the pilot shouts. His gunner obeys, and the tow cable detaches from the speeder as it retreats, screaming over the snow. As you speed away, the enormous Snowwalker attempts another step toward the trench and the power generators behind it. It lifts its great foreleg and then stutters. The war machine totters just for a second, and then, like a great tree after a lumberjack calls, "Timber!" it tumbles through the air and smashes into the ground with a gruesome shudder. It will not rise again. But the assault continues. Blast after blast from Snowwalkers and rocket launchers rock the Rebel base. Han Solo rushes through the smoky halls, followed by a panicked C-3PO. He finds his way through the shouting and the drifts of smoke and the smell of burning plastic to the command center. There, Leia is commanding the general. Han almost smiles. Her throat is straining, her voice ragged with shouting. "We have to launch the last transports now. Both of them. This is the end."
"We can't cover two at once." General Ryken is pleading with her.
Leia's cheeks are red like hot steel, and her eyes are just as bright. "We have to try." Then she turns and sees Han. She jabs a finger at him through the air.
What are you still doing here? You had clearance to leave.
Don't worry, I'll leave. But I've got to get you to your ship. You'd stay way past the end if I didn't.
Han says it like it's criticism, but it isn't.
Your Highness!
C-3PO warbles frantically.
We must take one of the final transports. It's our last hope.
Leia pivots to the gray-eyed general. Send all troops in Sector 12 to protect the soldiers on... Gravity goes funny. The ground is shifting beneath them. C-3PO careens into Han, his golden arms scrabbling at the air. One strikes Han in the face. Han grabs the tumbling droid and steadies him. A voice comes over the general address system.
Imperial troops have entered the base. Repeat, Imperial...
That's it, Princess,
says Han, taking her arm.
We're going.
Signal total evacuation,
Leia shouts to the general as Han drags her away.
And get to your transport.
Han leads Leia into the corridor. Red lights are ablaze everywhere. C-3PO totters behind, still babbling frantically. Shouts and cries compete with desperate announcements over the loudspeaker, to which no one is listening. Occasionally, an explosion drowns the rest of it out. The smoke smells now not only of plastic and metal, but of flesh. The rebels have lost. They have lost. Another explosion rocks the corridor, and this time, the ceiling falls in, right in front of them. Leia stares at it, bewildered. But just for an instant. Then she falls upon the rubble, trying to clear it from their path. But there's too much, and it's piled too high. Han watches her, frozen. The explosions are getting closer. Then he pulls his transmitter to his mouth.
Transport, this is Solo. I've got the princess with me. I can't get to you. I'll get her out on the Falcon.
Leia turns from the rubble.
That bucket of bolts can't get past the blockade.
That's your ride, princess.
Han calls back over his shoulder as he starts down the hall away from the rubble. C-3PO tottering behind.
It's up to you.
Leia hesitates. She looks down the blocked corridor. She glances after Solo.
We'll never survive,
she shouts. And he shouts back.
At least we'll never survive together.
She frowns, hesitates, and runs after him. The once peaceful snowplane is now streaked and stained with blood and oil, shrapnel and space junk. The air, once whistling only with the wind, now whistles with laser fire and crashing ships. You bank your speeder for another run at a snowwalker.
Rogue Two, are you all right?
I'm with you, Rogue Leader.
Your harpoon this time. I'll cover you with my manual blasters.
Like hunting shar whales on Uthora. I'm coming home.
The pilot of Rogue Two crows. You laugh. Okay, don't get too far out ahead of me now. But Rogue Two isn't listening. Taken by adrenaline and fear, he's already shot out onto the icy expanse between you and the walker.
Slow down,
you tell him.
Rogue Two coming home!
And then he explodes. From across his bow, a bright red blast of laser hits his speeder directly in its propulsion system. You watch in horror. And in that moment, as you stare at that brave pilot with a stupid sense of humor smoldering in the wreckage of his speeder, his gunner desperately trying to pry himself out of the back, that's when you're hit. The control panel looks like a thunderstorm. Your dials are spinning. Readouts have become tiny electric light shows. You're trying to hold the ship up, but gravity is fighting a battle with your speeder. And suddenly, it's winning. The G-force is strong and stronger, and you're pulling up. But that's not doing a thing. Your head is being flattened into your seat. You lock your jaw and close your eyes. The ship slams into the ice. You cannot breathe. Do you know the feeling? When you get the wind knocked out of you, you gasp at the air, but it will not enter your mouth. You arch your back, desperate, empty, literally breathless. screaming in silence for the breath that just moments ago you never had to think about. And then the wind comes rushing back into your lungs, and you thank the force, or whatever you believe in, and you breathe. You breathe just as the enormous steel foot of a snowwalker appears over your tiny snow speeder. You gaze up at it, motionless. The steel foot descends. You will be crushed. You will be crushed, and you will die. And then the cockpit is open, and you are over the metal gunnel, and you are rolling, rolling, rolling. A child's game turns suddenly serious, rolling across the icy snow. The great foot crashes down upon the speeder, and the snowwalker continues its inexorable march toward the rebel base. You spring to your feet. You don't know where you get the energy. It courses through you, though, like your newly regained breath. You start to run. At full speed, you can just keep pace with the war machine. You look over the ruined field of snow, the sun hanging bright and distant in the empty blue sky. The rebels in the trench are barely firing anymore. They must be retreating, back to the transports. It's over. Their only hope now is to get out before the power generator is destroyed, and the shields go down, and the great armada of Star Destroyers hovering just out of orbit pulverizes the base with their cannons, obliterating it and everyone inside. The only question now is how soon those generators will be blown. The sooner they are, the more rebels will die. Still running, you look up at the steel underbelly moving above you. Swinging from your belt is a harpoon gun. For Elephoth hunting, you think. Ridiculous to carry it into battle, but it's standard rebel equipment. Lucky for you. You aim it upward and let it fire. It catches on a mechanism on the snowwalker's underbelly, its steel cable trailing back to your hand. Running sideways now, you fasten the cable to your belt and hit retract on the gun. Suddenly, you are careening upward through the air, toward the belly of the walker. Your arms and legs dangle. Your belt is trying to tear itself from your body, and the wind is so cold on your neck that your teeth hurt. You reach for your lightsaber. The belly approaches. It arrives. You are dangling like a spider. A deadly spider. With a single swing, you hew the hinges from the escape hatch in the belly of the steel beast. The door goes spinning down into the snow. In a pouch hanging from the back of your belt is a grenade. You don't like grenades. If you want to commit the dire and irreparable act of taking a life, you think, you ought to at least look the person in the face before you do it. That is why Jedi prefer lightsabers. Also, it is harder to kill someone accidentally with a lightsaber. Grenades, like guns, have a disturbing tendency to take the life of the wrong person. But you're not a Jedi Knight. Not yet. You're just a kid with a lightsaber. Maybe you would be a Jedi already, if Darth Vader hadn't killed old Ben. Rage grabs your shoulders and chest, making them tight and hot. You wonder if Vader is out on one of those Imperial Star Destroyers, waiting to kill you too. Old Ben. What had he said while you lay unconscious in the snow? Dagobah? Yoda? Master Yoda? The Snowwalker fires a blast right at the satellite dish perched on the generator. It bursts into flames. Focus, you tell yourself. You start the detonation sequence on the grenade and hurl it through the hatch. Then you release the cable from your belt. As you hurtle snowward, you suddenly wonder if the walker will crash down on you when it explodes. Lesson Kappa. Relax. People are shooting at you. Get someone to help you. You are going to stand on one foot or balance that book on your head, and someone is going to very gently throw things at you. These things should be soft. I recommend balled up socks or crumpled pieces of paper. They should be thrown gently. You are going to bat them away with your hands without losing balance. Get yourself set. Stand on one foot or put the book on your head. Do 1 second of instantaneous meditation. Close your eyes. Smile. Breathe in and out. Open your eyes. Then have your assistant begin to gently toss objects at you. See if you can stay balanced and still defend yourself. Get going, young one. Let's see what you've got. Chapter 11. An enormous opera-singing dog yodels soulfully beside the Millennium Falcon. No, wait. That is Chewbacca. Never mind. Chewbacca howls mournfully. His small eyes dart from the Millennium Falcon to the hangar doors. They will remain open another few minutes, at most. After that, the Falcon will not fly. No matter if the walking barbershop floor succeeded in fixing the lifters or not. He cries again. Not that the Wookiee minds dying. Not really. Wookiees are nothing if not valiant. But they are also fiercely loyal. Chewbacca is not worried for himself. He's worried for Han and for Leia. Just then, they come sprinting around a corner. That is Chewbacca howling joyfully, in case you couldn't tell the difference. Han shouts,
"Start her up, Chewie! Start her up!"
Chewie leads the way up the gangplank, followed by Han and Leia. C-3PO totters into view around a distant corner.
Oh, wait! Wait for me!
He should hurry. They will absolutely not wait for him. Well, maybe Leia would. In the cockpit, Han throws switches all over the place. Chewbacca studies the reading skeptically. Han glances at his first mate, growls in the negative. Leia leans over Han's shoulder. Would it help if I got out and pushed?
It might.
Sir, might I suggest...
Han raises a single eyebrow at the droid.
Never mind.
C-3PO concludes sheepishly. The captain leaps from his seat. He rushes from control panel to mechanical bank back to control panel. Leia puts her hands on her hips. This jalopy will never get past the blockade.
Oh, she's got some surprises left in her, sweetheart.
Don't call me that.
I was talking to the ship.
Outside the Falcon, a power gasket explodes. Chewbacca roars, not joyfully.
I'm trying! Han shouts. I'm trying!
Suddenly, in the space of the hangar door, stormtroopers appear. Now it's a party! Leia shouts. One of the stormtrooper mounts a rocket launcher on his shoulder. As Han fiddles with some wiring under the cockpit's main dash, Leia slides into the captain's seat and fires at the stormtroopers. They are sent hurtling through the air in 6 different directions. Then she gets out of the seat. Han looks up at her for a moment, not sure if she's moved or not, and then goes back to furiously fiddling with wires.
Now!
He shouts at Chewbacca. The Wookiee pulls back on a thruster, and the Falcon roars to life.
Woohoo!
Han cries, leaping into the captain's chair.
One day, Leia says, you're going to be wrong. I just hope I'm there to see it.
Han Solo flashes her a smile. The hangar doors begin to close. Punch it!
Han shouts. Chewbacca throws a switch, and the Millennium Falcon roars out of the Rebel base, up through the snowy sky of Hoth, and into the blackness of space. You hit the snow. It explodes around you. The Snowwalker lumbers ahead 3, 4, 5 steps. You are breathing hard, watching it go. The Rebel troops have fled the trench. The fight is over. The Snowwalker fires at the generators. One catches fire. Then, overhead, you see it. Han's rickety old ship, still supposedly the fastest in the galaxy, shoots out of the south hangar and climbs up through the atmosphere. You smile. At least Han got out. Hopefully the princess, too. Yes, she's in that ship. You can tell. And then, an explosion presses you into the ground. A wave of heat courses over your body. You are lying on your back, the snow rapidly melting around you, fire licking your chest. Then it subsides. You raise the blackened visor of your helmet. The snowwalker is dangling from its own legs, a blackened husk. You get up and run. On a remote part of the ice field, far away from the battle and the now ruined rebel base, you trudge through the snow. A short distance farther sits your X-Wing, a spaceship outfitted for one pilot and one droid. R2 is in his place. He's the one who piloted it out here to the muster site to wait for you. The last of the other pilots are taking off, leaving a strange sight. A spaceship, small and lonesome, sitting on the edge of a frozen wilderness. The sounds of battle seem very distant out here. You hoist yourself into the cockpit. You grin. Hi, R2. Everything okay? Oh, that's sweet. I'm fine. I just hope everyone else is. You punch some numbers into the X-Wing's navigation system. R2 objects. I know. We're not meeting them at the rendezvous point. No, we're going somewhere else. It's called Dagobah. I'd never heard of it either, but there's someone there I need to meet. He's called Yoda. You initiate the engine. Well, some people might say that R2-D2 is a stupid name too, you retort. It's just something I have to do, R2. Just something I have to do. Strange Planets, Part 1. Chapter 12. Your X-Wing hovers over an emerald planet. It is a shimmering green orb, with large patches of blue, indicating perhaps great inland lakes. Clouds and mist swirl over the planet's surface, like steam rising from a cauldron. I'm not picking up any cities or technology, R2. You say, massive life form readings, though. There's something alive down there. A lot of somethings, actually. No, I'm not going to change my mind. I'm going to find this Yoda. R2, watch your language. The ship descends through the atmosphere, submerging itself deeper and deeper into the swirling mist and cloud. You can't see a thing. An alarm sounds in the cockpit. R2 beeps at you. I know, you shout. Your eyes frantically scan the scopes and meters. They're all dead. You get the strangest notion in your head. It's as if you're descending into some kind of dream. A place where technology doesn't work. Where science and logic fail. You try to shake the thought away, and then the ship shakes you back. Hard. You're being pushed back into your seat. Cracking and snapping echo through the cockpit. But the mist is so thick and deep, you can't tell if it's the ship breaking or whatever's outside. The X-Wing is falling, plunging deeper and deeper into the dream world. Your neck snaps forward as the ship jerks to a stop. Your head is pounding. Woozily, you try to make out the readings from the X-Wing. There are no readings. The ship is no longer functioning at all. Wherever you've just landed, you're not leaving anytime soon. You are now standing on the very threshold of your training. You have come to a place halfway between waking and dreaming, between the physical and the mystical. Welcome to Dagobah. Lesson Lambda. Strange places. New worlds. I want you to do something dangerous. Not too dangerous. Don't die on me, kid. But something outside your comfort zone. Something that makes your skin tingle. Just a little bit. Think of a place that you haven't gone before. It can be nearby. Maybe it's the janitor's closet in your school. Maybe it's the basement of your public library. Look around. It has one. Maybe it's your own attic. At night, when everyone's sleeping. Someplace that's a little strange, a little creepy. Next chance you get, go there. Alone. Don't tell anyone what you're doing. Slip into that strange place. Close the door behind you. Don't let it lock. Starving to death counts as dying on me. And sit there. Maybe you're in darkness. Maybe you're not. Explore the place with your mind. With your hands. Be alone there. Do you feel scared? Good. You should be.
Chapter 13.
You are standing on the hull of your X-Wing. It is half submerged in swamp. You can barely see. The air is dark and thick, and mists drift by, enveloping you in a warm cocoon of dew. You are afraid. There is life on this planet. The place teems with it. Some of it is poisonous. Some of it is sharp-toothed. Some of it is slow and strong and hungry, and you can't see any of it. There's a splash. "What's that?" you whisper. "R2?" No response. "R2!" Just the burbling, steaming silence of the darkness answers your call. "R2!" You rush to the side of your ship. Suddenly, the X-Wing lurches beneath you. You stick out your arms, sway, and steady yourself. R2 is gone. Ripples radiate out into the swamp. Frantically, you scan the morass, squinting into the murky gloom. R2? R2-D2! If there are hungry creatures about, they know you are here now. If the crashing of the ship hadn't told them, your screaming has. They know exactly where you are. Unfortunately, you don't know where they are. Suddenly, R2's periscope appears above the surface of the swamp. You sigh. "Get to land!" you call. "No telling what's in that swamp with you!" You stop speaking. The black back of a large creature breaches the surface of the swamp, just behind R2-D2... Then it dives. Gone. You stare, as decisive as a weather vane in a cyclone. R2's periscope is making its slow way to the nearest bank. Surely the creature's not interested in eating a hunk of circuits and metal. This is what you tell yourself, but your hands are sweating. R2 has reached the bank. His rounded dome of a head emerges from the water, followed by his cylindrical body. You begin to exhale, which is when the creature takes him. R2! You scream. He's gone, sucked back into the swamp. The water, already turbid, churns with the struggle. R2! Fight him! Come on, R2! Forget the other predators lurking nearby. You'll scream for R2. He might be a droid, but he's your friend. You'd fire your blaster, but you'd be just as likely to hit the little droid. And your lightsaber won't reach. Not nearly. So you just shout, "Fight him!" The water falls still. You stare. A bead of sweat drips from your nose. "R2? You murmur. And then, R2-D2 is flying up out of the swamp, screaming his shrill, whistling scream. He crashes into the trees, some 30 yards from the bank. You bound over the X-Wing's hull and leap to safe ground. You dash to him. He's lying on his back, tangled in branches and vines and roots, covered with swamp mess. You try to brush him off. Ugh, he smells disgusting. But you can't help smiling. "Good thing you taste so bad," you tell him. His response is not polite. You're sitting amid boxes on the bank of the swamp. You've plugged R2 into his power regenerator. You've rescued your pre-made shelter from the X-Wing and placed most of the components where they should go. And you've opened your rations box. You gnaw on a protein stick, watch your ship sink slowly into the bog, and think about how useless, how indecisive you were when R2 was getting eaten by that swamp thing. You feel sick. Then you think of Leia and Han and Chewie and even C-3PO and that flying hunk of bolts. Last you saw them, they were heading straight toward an Imperial armada. You didn't help them, just like you didn't help R2. You flew off to this planet to find some name from some hallucination you had. Yoda? There's no Yoda. You pick up a stick and start breaking it. What are we doing here, R2? Maybe I should have listened to you. Ben told me Master Yoda was here. You stare around at the overgrown fen. The whole place smells of rot. What Jedi Master would live here? There's not even a spaceport.
Spaceport? What is spaceport?
You leap to your feet and spin at the same time, hands raised in self-defense. Half a meter from you sits one of the strangest creatures you have ever seen. He's bluish-green with long ears and bulging eyes. Your hand creeps slowly toward your lightsaber. Who are you? You demand.
I ask question first.
The creature laughs. His voice is raspy and high, as if a frog had learned to talk. Maybe he is some kind of frog. Then you think, no, his ears are too big. Before you've registered it, he is rummaging through your food.
Food this is?
He croaks.
Hungry I am.
Get out of there. That's mine.
What is yours?
He asks, chewing on one of your dehydrated veggie bars and then throwing it away. That is.
What is mine?
He continues, as if you'd interrupted him.
Yours and mine is not. There only is.
What? Stop talking nonsense. Get out of here. R2-D2, who's been beeping madly since this little gnome showed up, is reaching his long, retractable arm out to grab a protein stick that the creature has begun to nibble on. He gets hold of it. The creature refuses to let go. They start a tug of war over the protein stick. Where am I? You mutter, staring at the surreal scene. The creature has picked up a gnarled walking stick and is hitting R2-D2 over the head with it as he desperately grips the protein stick with his free hand. Oh, just let him have it, R2. R2 lets go and goes tumbling backward. The creature sits down and with a satisfied grin takes a bite of the protein stick. Suddenly, he contorts his strange face into an even stranger one and throws the stick over his shoulder.
How get so big do you, eating such bad food?
It's not meant for little swamp frogs, you reply. It's meant for humans. The creature peers up at you.
What are you doing here, I am wondering?
You sigh. Oh, I'm looking for a great warrior.
Great warrior, you say? War makes not one great.
You shake your head. You can barely make sense of what he's saying. Fine, I'm looking for a great Jedi Master, then.
A Jedi Master? Yoda, you want.
You perk up. You know him?
Know him I do. Take him to you I can. But first, eat we must. Come!
The little creature picks up the gnarled stick he's been hitting R2 with and uses it as a cane. Not that he needs one. He bounds over roots twice his height with apparently little effort. You struggle behind him, sweat dripping down your hair and into your eyes, the rich, fetid smell of the swamp clogging your nostrils. R2 rolls and totters behind you, sometimes. The rest of the time, you have to carry him. Your shirt is soaked, and your back is aching when the little frog creature comes to a stop. You put R2 down with a grunt. You are standing before what looks like a pile of roots and mud that someone cut a single door and window into. This is where Yoda lives?
My house this is. Eat we must.
The door's so low you have to crawl through it. R2 can't even fit. So you tell him to wait outside. He peers through the single round window and mutters low beeps and whistles. You hope the creature can't understand them. You've known space pirates who wouldn't use the language R2 does. Once in the house, the creature immediately busies himself with cooking. He has a pot hung over a little fire and two small cauldrons sitting among coals, and he runs back and forth between them, throwing roots and swamp weed into them. As he cooks, the smell that wafts through the room reminds you of a garbage depot in the hot season on Tatooine. Then you sense it. Something is moving behind you. You glance back and dive to the ground. There is a very large snake. Or maybe it's not a snake. It could be a slug. A slake, maybe? Or a snug? Whatever it is, it gives you the creeps. You glance between the slug and the blue-green creature. He doesn't pay any attention to it. You find another seat. The little frogman bustles over the putrid meal, humming to himself, as outside R2 mumbles a stream of electronic invective so foul you're blushing. Finally, you can't take it any longer. When am I going to see Yoda? You blurt.
Later, later. Now we eat. Even Jedi Master is eating now.
The creature shoves a spoonful of root leaf stew into your mouth. It has the consistency of boiled brains, and you're about to spit it out when you stop. It doesn't taste terrible, actually. You chew and swallow.
Good? Good!
squeals the little creature. Yes, you say surprised. Good. Can I see Yoda now?
First,
says the creature,
a story I tell.
What? No!
Short story, good story. You sit. You listen. Maybe learn something you will about Yoda.
You sigh. If you learn something about the Jedi Master, maybe it's worth hearing the story. You settle yourself among the roots, coals, and steaming pots, making sure no more snakes are sharing your seat. The ceiling is low and smoky above you. The smell of boiling swamp weed suffuses the little house. The light is dim and red. The creature begins. Now, I'm going to tell you the creature's story as I've heard it, passed down through the years. I'm not going to try to replicate the creature's strange way of speaking. Besides, you wouldn't know what I was talking about. I wouldn't know what I was talking about. I'm just going to tell it. It goes like this. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there lived a poor man with his three sons. The oldest son was strong and handsome, and everyone thought he was very wonderful. He agreed with them. The second son was wise and clever, and everyone thought he, too, was very wonderful. He also agreed with them. The youngest son was quiet and thoughtful, and everyone thought he was an idiot. He did not agree with them, but nobody cared what he thought. One day, the oldest son announced that he was going out into the wide world to find his fortune. His father begged him not to go.
Stay and help your poor father on the farm. If you go, who will milk the cow and feed the chickens? We'll all starve.
But the oldest son said, My brothers can milk the cow and feed the chickens. I'm off to seek my fortune. So he packed a bag with plenty of food for his journey, and off he went. Soon, he came to a dark and frightening forest. He hesitated just beyond the forest's shadows, and then he saw, sitting by the side of the path, a toad. The toad croaked at him.
"Hungry I am. Share your food with me, will you?"
"Yes, I realize the toad talks like the creature on Dagobah. I don't know why. That's just the way the story's always told." But the brother refused. "Be gone, you filthy toad. I am off to seek my fortune." He tried to kick the toad, and then he strode forward into the dark wood. Soon, he came to a great palace. Its walls were as tall and strong as tree trunks, and banners waved from every turret. The boy wanted to know who lived in such a castle, so he asked one of the guards. The guard said it was a great king. "Perhaps this king will make me the commander of his army," the oldest son exclaimed. "Take me to him." So he was brought before the king. The king sat on a simple throne, and he wore no crown. When the boy saw the king, he announced, "I have come to seek my fortune."
"Your fortune you seek," replied the king. "Then your fortune you shall have."
And with those words, the oldest brother was suddenly transformed into a fly. A long tongue shot out from the king's mouth, caught the oldest brother, and pulled him down the king's throat. The creature peers up at you, as if expecting you to speak.
"That was a good story," you say.
Really, you're just trying to be polite. You begin to stand up. "Can I see Yoda now?" The creature growls.
"Finished it, isn't? Listen, you must. Interrupt, do not. Or take you to Yoda, I won't."
You frown and force yourself to listen. The toad-like creature continues his strange tale. Back at the poor man's house, the second brother and the youngest brother worked twice as hard to milk the cow and feed the chickens and care for their poor father. But after some time, the second son announced that he was going out into the wide world to find his fortune, just like his brother had. His father begged him not to go.
"Stay and help your poor father on the farm. If you go, who will milk the cow and feed the chickens? We'll starve."
But the second son said, "My brother can milk the cow and feed the chickens. I'm off to seek my fortune." So he packed a bag with plenty of food for his journey, and off he went. He followed the same road as the oldest brother, and soon he came to the same dark forest. He, like his brother, hesitated just beyond the wood's shadows. And then he saw, sitting by the side of the road, a cat.
"Hungry I am," the cat said. "Share your food with me, will you?"
Yes, the cat also talks like the creature. Again, I have no idea why. But the second brother also refused.
"Be gone, you mangy cat! I am off to seek my fortune."
He tried to kick the cat, and then he strode forward into the dark wood. Soon he came to the same great palace, and he, too, asked to live there. The guard said he was a great king. "Perhaps the king will make me his closest advisor," the second son exclaimed. "Take me to him." So he was brought before the king. When the boy saw the king, he announced, "I have come to seek my fortune."
"Your fortune you seek?" replied the king. "Then your fortune you shall have."
And with those words, the second brother became a mouse. And the king reached out with a great paw and crushed the brother. And then the king ate him up. You are watching the little creature tell this tale. You have noticed something in him, something you had not seen before. Intensity, age, and some hidden ferocious force. You cannot put a name to it, but it scares you. Back at the poor man's house, The youngest brother worked 3 times as hard to milk the cow and feed the chickens and care for his poor father. But one day, the youngest brother came before his father and said, "Father, I would like to go out into the world and discover what has happened to my 2 brothers. His father begged him not to go.
"You are just a simple boy. You will be lost, or worse. Stay here and milk the cow and feed the chickens and take care of your poor old father."
But the youngest son said, "I have set aside 10 pails of milk for you to drink and 100 eggs for you to eat. For my brothers are gone, and there is plenty of extra food now. Eat what I have set aside for you, and I promise I will return before it is all gone." When the father saw what his youngest son had done, he agreed to let him go. So the boy packed a bag with a little bit of food and set down the same road as his brothers had. And soon he came to the same dark forest. He, like his brothers, hesitated just beyond the wood shadows. And then he saw, sitting by the side of the road, a chicken.
"Hungry I am,"
the chicken said.
"Share your food with me, will you?"
So the youngest brother sat down and opened his bag and laid out all the food he had brought for his journey on the ground. And he and the chicken sat and ate. The chicken had an enormous appetite, and soon all the food was gone. Then the brother picked up his bag and ventured into the dark forest. His stomach began to rumble, but his bag was empty. Kilometers and kilometers he went, until his legs were shaking and he was on the verge of collapsing from hunger. Just when he thought he could go no farther, he came to the castle in the wood. He asked the guard who lived there and heard it was a great king. "Perhaps the king knows where my brothers are," he said. "May I see him?" He was so weak with hunger that he had to be carried up to the king's throne room. When the boy saw the king, he fell to his knees. "Please, king, help me. I seek my brothers who ventured into this wood and disappeared. Also," he added, "I am very hungry." The king laughed, and his laugh sounded like this.
"Buck, buck,
Then the king said,
"Brothers you shall not see. Dead they are. But this chicken feed you must take. To your father's chickens you will give it, and hungry again you shall never be."
So the boy returned home with no brothers, but with the chicken feed. His father cried with joy when he saw his youngest son return to him. Then they fed the king's chicken feed to the chickens. And forever after, when those chickens laid eggs, the eggs were made of solid gold, and the boy and his father lived happily ever after. The creature stopped speaking. He is still staring at you, but now with a satisfied expression on his strange green face. "That's it?" you ask. He nods happily. You gaze at the little creature. The magic you felt when he spoke is gone. He is a strange, lonely little swamp toad. Nothing more. Your voice is loud and angry when you say, "That had nothing to do with Yoda." You rise to your feet and hit your head hard on the ceiling. "Why are you wasting my time?" The creature looks crestfallen. He turns away from you. You sit back down and sigh. "I'll never be a Jedi at this rate." The creature murmurs.
"Why wish you become Jedi,
You stare at the flickering fire beneath the pot of root leaf stew. "I don't know. To save the galaxy from the Empire, and to help my friends." The creature peers at you, as if he knows there is more. "And," you continue, "and, well, because of my father, I guess."
"Ah,"
says the creature, crawling up onto his little bed and sitting there. He kicks his short legs back and forth before him, like a small child.
"Powerful Jedi was your father,
Hmm.
You roll your eyes. How do you know? You don't even know who I am. This is ridiculous. You stand up and hit your head on the ceiling again. You curse and turn toward the door. Just outside the window, R2 is jumping up and down, trying to get your attention. Yeah, R2, we're leaving. You're clambering over roots and chairs and stools to get to the door. Behind you, the creature closes his great green and black eyes. His voice is no more than a murmur.
I cannot teach him. He has no patience.
You hesitate at the door. The creature is answered by a voice, as vast and calm as the deserts of Tatooine.
He will learn patience.
You spin around. There is no one else in the room. The creature says,
He is not ready.
Yoda! You cry, staring at the strange little creature. You are Yoda! Obi-Wan Kenobi's voice suffuses the little house.
Was I any better when you taught me?
He is too old.
The creature, Yoda, replies.
Too old to begin the training.
You move swiftly to the side of his bed and kneel, peering at the strange blue-green skin, wizened like a raisin, white wisps of hair flying in all directions from his otherwise bald scalp. He is hideous. He is ridiculous. He is Yoda. Yoda, please, you say. I've already learned so much. And then you pause before saying, I understand the story now. It was about Yoda. The creature turns his luminous eyes upon you. You were the frog, the cat, the chicken, and the king. I was each of the three brothers.
The first two brothers you were,
Yoda says, pointing a gnarled finger in your face. I was, you say, and you let your head fall. But I won't be. I will be the youngest boy. I will trust you. I will listen to you. I will learn. And then you add, I'm not afraid. Yoda's eyes darken. He rises up, taller and taller, until he seems to fill the room. Until it seems that he is the greatest, grandest, largest creature you have ever met.
You will be,
he intones, looking down at you, through you, and deep into you.
Oh, you will be.
Lesson Mew. The Force is not multiple choice. So, which are you, young Padawan? One of the older brothers or the youngest? I know what you'd like to say. We'd all like to say that we're the youngest brother. But are you really? Let's find out. Are you familiar with those teen magazines that have multiple choice tests? You answer a bunch of questions, and if you choose mostly A, you're this kind of person, and mostly B, you're that other kind. We're going to do one of those tests. One question, three options. You might want to meditate before we begin. Really? Okay, have you meditated? Then here we go. It's lunchtime in the school cafeteria. You exit the food line, gripping your tray of steaming sloppy joe. You look around. To your right, you see your friends. The table is full except for one chair next to your best friend. You know your best friend has been having a really rough day. Straight ahead of you, there's a new kid. A group of mean kids has sat down around him. They look like they're already starting to give the kid a hard time. To your left, there's someone in your class who sits alone every day. She would obviously like to sit with someone, but nobody gives her a chance. So, do you A, go sit beside your friend? He or she is your best friend and needs your support today. The other kids can wait. B, sit down with the new student. If the mean kids tease him, you'll stand up to them, or at least let the new kid know you're on his side. C. Join the table with the loner. She's been suffering the longest, and it's time to help her out.